Hi guys, welcome back to Timeline Podcast. This is a new week, a new episode. I hope you really enjoyed the previous episode when we talked about camera gear. And when we talked about camera gear, I feel like the next great transition would be talking about using that camera gear for work.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about freelancing and...
Just me then?
Yeah, well, it's going to be, I don't know, I quite like to have a conversation with you. Maybe I can ask in a more of an interviewee type of way on the whole, I don't know, just the whole conversation about freelancing. I think it's quite fascinating for a lot of people because especially, I think I've said in a couple of, either in my videos or in a previous podcast, my dad said once, like, the best thing you can do in for a career is to work for yourself. And I think that's always stuck with me. And yes, I am very much in full-time work at the minute, but you are a freelancer. And I think it'd be really interesting to have a discussion about how that all came about and what you do, the struggles of freelancing, positives and negatives of freelancing.
So where shall we start? I think there's a lot of different things to unpack, but also I think there's a lot of presumptions about freelancing, especially freelancing in London specifically, that people don't realize, but I don't know what all of them might be, but I don't know what your presumptions are.
Mm. Well, I'm trying to think of the percentage of people that I know who freelance because I've been in full-time employment.
Freelance can mean a lot of different things, right? Especially with people that you meet in London, because freelance can mean you work for yourself, but you're sitting at home being a bum.
Yeah.
Freelancing also can mean you work for a company for 3 or 4 months on a contract, but the company is actually paying you, but you work kind of on your own means. And then freelancing, like the word freelancing is way too vague for a lot of people in London, because some of the freelancers that we might know, I don't know, what do you even do to make money and sit at home?
Yeah. I mean, again, we're coming at this from the creative industry because a lot of my friends are, you know, they're designers or they're within like other industries, not necessarily like creative media, but freelance is in anything. It's consultants. It's, I'm sure there's probably freelancers who work in the health industry or in, you know.
Yeah. But I think freelancing is very a predominant thing for creative industries.
Yeah. There's a figure. I should have done a bit of research before this podcast, but.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
there was a figure. I don't know if it was like 50% of people are going to be freelance by 2040 or something. Something along those lines, because I think it's appealing, right? It's very appealing to work for yourself. And especially during lockdown, I think a lot of people are slowly starting to cotton on to the fact that one, you can work from home because there is, I think, a big presumption that freelancers have this cushy life at home, right? That's probably another like thing that we can talk about and thing to unpack because yeah, freelancers predominantly do work at home, but it's not... rolling out of bed at one and then
I don't think actually there will be a lot of freelancers by 2020. What did you say, 2040?
Yeah,
I think if the law changes for freelancers, then I think that number could drastically reduce, because I think right now, especially in the UK, the government are trying to get less freelancers and more people in full-time employment, but the law that was meant to be passed this year has been postponed because of COVID.
Okay.
But that's way too lengthy to talk about in
interesting. Okay.
A podcast.
Okay.
So that's essentially the over general message is COVID happened, meaning the law that was potentially going to be passed in April has been postponed for 1 year and maybe longer. But that it could be the end of a lot, especially in the creative industry, could be the end of a lot of freelancers in London.
Yeah.
And more people going to full-time employment.
Well, I mean, talking about COVID and freelancers is probably another podcast episode in its entirety, because how it's affected people I know, friends, like it's mad. It's absolutely mad. And for any freelancers listening to the podcast right now, I hope you're doing all right. I hope you're doing good. And I hope that you're in a position where you're getting by, you know, because it will pick up again. I have seen people start to go off and shoot and, you know, work on projects again, which is great, but it's been a hell of a couple of months.
Yeah, 100%. But I think what we should start with is freelancing in the creative industry, especially in London. So that's all I can really speak upon, because my experience has been in London, there's kind of different people that freelance that call them different things. So you either freelance and you kind of literally almost work from home, or you have a little office somewhere, shared desk space, and you find your own clients. You contact your own clients. You do everything yourself. You're your own admin. You do that all yourself. But then there's another type of creative freelancer, which is you sign up with agencies and the agencies get you the jobs and you get paid technically by the agency. So that's two kind of different types of freelancing. One is more self-initiated and one is more you're relying on other people to help you get the jobs.
Okay.
And then another type of freelancer would be a mixture of both. But there is so many different kind of freelancer types of people, because some people might be like self-shooters, self-creatives, like designers doing their own thing and they make money by doing their own thing. So like illustrators, for example, they might sit at home and do their own thing and get contacted because they've been featured in magazines, companies contact them, they work on commission projects, and that's their way of freelancing.
In my personal opinion, I see freelancers as earning a lot more than people in regular work. What do you think about that?
Yeah, false. True and false.
Yeah.
I personally think it can be true for a small majority of people. I think a lot of people that go into freelancing or have a view on freelancing, or they might hear about what freelancers earn as a rate. Yes, when you hear the rate, you're like, wow, that's a big figure. But then you also have to realize any freelancer can work for one day a week, and that might be all the work they get for that week. And that's it. Or like the work could be more sporadic. So even if you are booked in for like a 3 or 4 month job or 12 month job, after them time period, you might not get a job again for a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't get paid if you get sick. You don't get paid if you go on holiday. Even Christmas, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
Well, I guess no one gets paid at Christmas, but if you take 2 week break to go and see your family for Christmas, you're not getting paid. So
yeah,
that higher rate almost counteracts that.
Yeah.
But like my personal opinion, like, yes, there is opportunity for freelancers to get paid more than full-time people. But also, like, the amount of work you put in, like, everyone's going to put the same amount of work in. It's just slightly different, especially if you're more efficient.
Mm.
But then I sometimes do think if I just stuck up what I did and went full-time, I probably could earn a lot more than what I'm earning right now.
Mm.
But obviously, my circumstances changed and everything changed. Everyone's different.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So
that didn't really answer the question. So it's like a yes and a no.
Well, I think it's always going to be a yes and a no, because just a disclaimer, this podcast is not, you know, condoning any type of lifestyle, because it's all dependent on you and your circumstances.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Yes, I do 100% see the positives of being freelance, but you know, I've been in full-time work since, yeah, like the age of 16. So for me, freelance is more of it's just interesting, because a lot of my friends are freelancers, and yeah, I completely see, you know, I live with you. I see the positives and negatives of the job. I kind of have my job and I see the positives and negatives of what I do. And yeah, like I remember I used to work with a guy, there's a guy called Grant Stevens, who is an amazing freelancer. He's like full techie. I don't know if he'll ever listen to this podcast, but I remember I spoke to him once when I was working at Dream Tech years and years ago, and he said that he'd been working solidly for like 60, 70 days in a row. And I was like, oh my goodness, like weekends, like full on constant work. And I was like, I mean, one, I was like, you must be earning so much money if you're doing that every single day, because, you know, I was kind of doing the books at the time and I knew how much freelancers were getting paid. And I was just like, that's incredible. But at the same time, you must be absolutely exhausted. Cause I, you know, yes, every now and then I'll do a bit of work at the weekend, but it's typical if you're working 9 to 5 that you'll, you know, 9 to 5, it's, you know, that is the job. You do 9 a.m. to about 5, 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. And that's what you do. You go into a set location, you see your colleagues and you know, your friends at work, you do the work, and then you go home. Whereas freelance is way more, you know, you could be not shooting until 6 p.m. at night, and then you've got 6 p.m. till 2 a.m. shoot, or you're doing a wedding, and then that, you know, you've got to be at the wedding location at 6 a.m. in the morning, and you're not going to finish until like, yeah, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. at midnight. And then you'll have to come back, and then they want, you know, they want to see the raws or the footage like in a couple of days. You've got to then stay up all night and edit that. Like, it's completely, it's a bit all over the place, but within the creative industry, that's what I kind of see freelancers being, as more, you know, your own boss in a way, but at the same time, it's a bit more intense.
Well, it can be intense, but also it can be very rewarding. Like, if you're full time, it could take you one whole day to do one task that you've been set when you're full time. If I'm freelancing somewhere, if they gave me one task that they think should take all day and I do it within 2 hours, well then, are you going to pay me for the whole day or just pay me for the 2 hours? But if I take that work away somewhere and I wait a day, I do it in 10 minutes. I wait a day and tell you, oh, actually took me 16 hours to do.
Yeah.
Because you knew it's going to take 16 hours, but because I'm good at what I do, it doesn't take me as long.
Yeah.
Then.
But that's the thing. Let's say you're editing a project and it takes you 2 hours. Like, again, I could be in full-time work and I could be doing a project that takes me 2 hours, but because it's full-time work, you know,
you slog it out for the whole day.
Yeah. You'll go in like, this is right. A typical day for me, you go into a studio, you'd maybe like catch up with people. You'd have a meeting. And then, you know, right now, like I'm having meetings, but obviously virtually, but at work we go in, you know, you go into like a meeting room, you'd have like a 5-10 minute catch up, see what people did at the weekend. Like, and this is obviously what I miss, the physicalities of seeing people in the office and seeing people and, you know, bumping into someone on the hallway or like, you know, having that water cooler conversation, and you get to know what people are working on.
Slightly, freelancers that do work in offices can do that, but it's...
Yeah.
That's what I meant by there's a couple of different freelancing styles.
Well, yeah. Okay,
styles.
So let's go back, because you were, I don't know if you want to go into it, but a couple of years ago you were based, well, full time. You were there pretty much every day, weren't you, at certain offices? And that was for 6-7 months.
Yeah. So I would have just done what I would have done if I was full time. But
yeah,
at the same time, I like being freelance, I probably work harder than ever just because I want to impress the client. I don't want to go in somewhere and be like, oh, half-assed about it. Like anywhere that I've worked, I still work at probably the same speed that I've worked. And because I'm good at what I do, when I go somewhere and I know I can absolutely nail this project, if you think you're going to spend a whole day on it, and yes, I understand you're paying me for the whole day, I could take this, do this for the whole day and make it last longer. But sometimes there's like, you have to balance it out. If I complete this within 3 hours and you can give me another project, then the client's like, damn, this guy's good. This guy's good and he's fast.
Mm.
We need to get him in more.
Yeah.
We've got more stuff we can give him. Okay. And then 5 months later, he's still there. Okay. We don't need anyone anymore. Bye. Four months later, we need someone. You're top of the list.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can go back in slightly slower pace, but still high quality.
Yeah.
In terms of what you do.
That's the thing. A lot of the freelancers I know, you know, rock up early. They are, you know, professional, because at the end of the day, what we're paying them is how they're paying their bills and how they're paying their rent. You know, I think if you're a freelancer, you've got to have that certain level of like class and like aptitude for the job, because, you know, if you come to me and I'm paying you for, I don't know, a music shoot, let's say, and you rock up half an hour late and then you've got to set up all your kit and I'm like, oh, this dude is like wasting my time. And then you're half-assed on the job. I'm never going to hire you again. And I'm going to tell people, oh, this guy's, don't hire him.
I've met someone before, right? I was doing video at a shoot. It was quite recently, actually, within the last 6 months. Obviously, the last couple of months we've been locked on, but let's say Christmas time.
Yeah.
I rocked up. I was early. I was doing video. I knew what I was doing and had a chat with the social person. This guy rocks up that he was taking photos in one location. He was not wearing the right attire as such to fit in, which is quite important. And guess what? Have a guess.
He lost the footage.
No. He came in. First thing he said to the, I think the client might have been friends, but also not very close friends. First thing he said, I'm so tired.
Oh no.
Why was he tired?
Oh, I'd been out the night before.
Yeah. He was hungover.
No.
And I'm like, dude, how can you turn up to a shoot where they're paying you a decent rate for like a couple of hours of your time to take a few...
Yeah.
They're not even a serious photo shoot, right? Just a few photos of an event that's happening.
Yeah.
And he rocks up hungover as soon as he leaves. And because I'm good friends with the people that work there, they then say, I can't believe he turned up hungover. I can't believe he actually said he was hungover and we're not going to hire him again.
At least, if you're hungover, just try and hide it, you know? Just get through the day.
But he was like straight up, I'm hungover.
Yeah.
And then another scenario where I've been a freelancer, but we've hired in more freelancers for the team. And some people just can't do, like this was when I used to do design work. Some people just can't do the job. Or they come in, they say, we've worked on X, Y, and Z, and this is our portfolio. And we've managed to have a look at the portfolio as well with the managers. And these people come in, I'm like, where have you been? Have you been hiding underneath a rock? You can't even see about Photoshop files in the right sizes and like really common sizes that designers work with.
Mm.
You don't even know them sizes and you don't know how to save them out. And it's not the right resolution. And I'm just thinking, what have you been doing all day? You've been sitting there. If you need some help, then just ask for some help in case we do stuff differently.
Yeah. On the topic then of reputations and stuff, how much work do you think you've got over the past couple of years that has been through word of mouth? I guess two things. One, when would you, you know, like what would you say you are the things that you need to hit before you go freelance properly?
And okay, let's answer the first question, right?
So yeah.
What stage should you go freelance? A lot of people actually ask me on my YouTube channel in the comments, I want to go freelance. Can you give me some tips and ideas? So it's all circumstantial in terms of what your money flow is currently. If you're at uni, if you're a student, freelance as much as you can. Even ask your local coffee shop, your local restaurant, like your friends, like your peers, ask them if they have any work they can give you. It doesn't have to be super high paid, even if it's just to pay for you to have an extra meal somewhere, for you to get a free meal at a restaurant with you and your friend, then do that. Maybe they need a flyer, maybe they need promotional stuff. Just start doing bits and bobs and small pieces of work. You don't need it as a full-time career yet because there's no need, but just keep reaching out to people. If you are working part-time, like keep your part-time job, do freelance part-time as well. And then once you feel that the freelance is taking too much time and you're actually getting enough money to almost outweigh your part-time job, then that's where you switch. Similarly to if you have a full-time job, I actually know people that have a full-time job and also have a side hustle. And personally, unless you have a lot of money saved up, I definitely would not advise to jump freelance or have your own company. Everyone's different. I personally feel that you should be able to still do your side hustle, your freelance stuff on the side while sustaining a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, let's say in a full-time job, you earn £100. In your side hustle right now, you're earning £20. But if you get to that stage where you're earning like £60 or £70 and you think, right, I actually could make double this and make 150 or at least 100 and match my salary, then that's where I would say, take a leap of faith and do the switch.
Yeah.
But without having any of that, doing the switch is almost like not risky. I guess some people are like, oh, I'm just going to leave my job and then start a new career. But then all these people do have financial backgrounds. If you come from a working class background, like there's no point. A lot of even top business people, that's the recommendation they would give you. Don't leave your full-time job.
Mm.
Just do what you need to do, 9 to 5, leave at 5, go home, have dinner, and then start working on yourself.
Yeah.
And then do that day in, day out. That's what I used to do. I freelanced 9 to 5 in the office. And then when I came home, I worked on myself, worked on my YouTube channel, worked on doing more photo, video stuff while I was doing the design. And that's how I got to where I am right now. So it is possible. Like you just have to reevaluate your lifestyle, reevaluate what you spend money on.
Your priorities, basically. Yeah. Like
I think a lot of people do want to make the leap to freelance because they know it can be beneficial in a way.
It looks appealing.
Yeah, but there's honestly, like, there's so many negatives as well that people just don't. The positives do outweigh it, especially if you have family. You can spend more time with your family, but at the start, it can be very hard.
Mm.
Then to your second question, when you asked about how much of my work personally has been recommended from people, I'd say mine is probably, in a way, it is 100%. But if you want to be really specific about it, I would say it's 75-25%. 75 being personal recommendations. It literally would be either my manager or someone that I've worked with directly that has seen how good I am and what outcome I can produce. If it is design or if it is video or photo, like whatever it is I'm doing, that is from a literal direct person that I've had to deliver work to and they've reviewed my work.
Yeah.
The other 25% is recruitment agencies pitching me into jobs.
Is that through email, through LinkedIn?
Email, LinkedIn, everything.
Yeah.
But then also once they get me in on one job and I've done one job, then that recruiter then becomes my personal recommendation for every other job. So I guess the 25% is like new leads.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but then after the new lead happens, that percentage then drops because that gets shifted over to personal recommendation.
But let's say then you start working for another company and you work with an individual in that company who then gets asked by someone, oh, hey, do you have a recommendation for a videographer, for an editor? And they're like, oh yeah, we work with this guy.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get that recommendation because of that person in that company.
But that only would happen if I had a good rapport with the team I'm working with and we met at a, not a work level, but more of a friend level.
Yeah. But I'd say since I've known you, I've never heard you, I mean, this is a recommendation, hire Tim for your projects. But I think every company that you've worked with, you've had that connection with, or at least with one person within the team.
I'm smiling a lot here. No, I just feel that, think I've developed a formula, but it's not a written formula. It's just like, this is who I am. This is what I do. And I don't know, maybe it's just my personality that just helps.
You get the job done, you get it done to a certain degree, and you have an essence of your own personality built in to that work. So if you were going into the office of said company, let's say, you wouldn't just go in, sit down at the desk, do the work, go home. You would go in, catch up with people, do the work, maybe suggest if people want to go for lunch.
Like, then, some companies I've worked with, other people have said this, not me, but some people are like, how come you know everyone in the company? And I've been there for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I can name everyone. Like, I'm quite good with names. So I can name everyone in the company. Everyone would know me. And if I needed to go get lunch with someone, it might not be a big issue because I could just ask this person or this person.
Which is surprising because, like, the freelancers that I've worked with, you know, they'd go into a company, right? You've been given a name through an email address. You're like, oh, hey, can I sign in under this name?
Yeah.
They go and meet that person. And then that's it. So, yeah, so would you say that you go in, you meet the person that you are meant to be doing work with, and then you get assigned like a desk or something, and then you'll go and speak to the person next to you on that desk and then just be like, hey, I'm Tim, this is what I'm doing. Is that how it kind of works? Or would you just like go and make coffee and then...
I don't know how it works. It just works. Like, let's say the past, I can't even name a company that this hasn't happened at, but every company that I've worked with, I don't know, just I end up knowing everyone in the business. Not even just my team, but the wider business. Like,
yeah.
A majority of the places I've worked in have relatively small offices in terms of like that one company brand. And I actually could say to you, I know everyone. I would know everyone in that company, not just like that team.
Yeah.
So it's just a case
of putting the time in, putting the effort in with people. And because you never know, like companies, especially large corporations, there's so many different departments and there's so many people doing different things. And you'd be extremely surprised at how little people talk, especially at corporations. I think it is super valuable to know different people because then you can you're always their go-to.
Yeah, person. I think what helps is I'm quite good remembering names, and I feel in the past couple of years I am less awkward to just randomly approach a random person. I don't even know what the formula is. Maybe it's just like Tim Chung magic.
I think it. Yeah, for sure, it is like your style and the way you approach things. I think as well, it's you become more confident, right? As you get older, you're less like, when you're young, you're a bit like, oh, maybe I don't want to go and talk to the boss because, you know.
But then I don't know if it is because I was younger, because in the past 2 years, so even when I was like 24, 25, that was just the same thing. Yeah, even in my first job, actually, my first job, I literally knew everyone in that office. And it was almost a downside because my team didn't like the fact that I knew everyone, because some person would walk over and say, oh, like, hi Tim, like, how's your weekend? Or they would have been like, how do you know them? Don't they work in like the third section of the, well, it's a massive office. Don't they work in the third room? I'm like, yeah, they work in finance, or yeah, they work in IT, or they work in, I don't know, materials, or they work in the sewing room, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd be like, how do you know them? Just like, you just met them.
Yeah.
And they're like, how? I'm like, oh, I don't really know. Or we had drinks at the pub, and then just big group of us and just got introduced.
Yeah.
But then because I'm quite good, I don't know how good I am anymore, but I'm generally quite good at remembering names, fortunately and unfortunately. Then as soon as tell me a bit about you, then I'm like, okay, this is where you work, this is where you live, this is that. And then
as soon as you see them the following weekend, you can be like, hey, I personally think being just genuinely a nice person and being kind is so underrated in our business. And all right, I think some people, like, let's say the chap that you spoke about earlier, I say chap, it could have been a girl, but I'm just, I'm just assuming it was a guy.
Or chap.
The guy that you mentioned who was hungover on that shoot.
Oh yes, it was guy.
Yeah. What was I going to say?
He's never getting hired again. Because you know why? Because I'll get hired instead of him.
Yeah.
It's just how it works. But like, being nice does help, because...
Yeah, that was it. Let's say that you accidentally lost a piece of footage.
Touchwood has never happened.
No, but like, let's say it accidentally happens. If you're apologetic and, you know, you go about it in the right way, rather than like, you know, not emailing someone, not just, you know, forgetting it ever happened, being like that kind of bad actor. If, let's say, you go the opposite route and you're, yeah, super apologetic, you know, explain this happened, I'll take a bit off my cost because of what happened. Like, at least you're then more likely to be like, oh, this happened, but, you know, they're really nice about it, and he is a really nice guy, and, you know, we'll let him off on this occasion.
You should never lose footage, because you should understand how to back things up as soon as you're finished or something. What other things do you think are people think that freelance is?
The practicalities of it all. So,
not practical.
That you need a lot of items. And I guess this leads on from our previous conversation on kit, but I feel like within the freelance industry, there's a lot of assumptions that people own an entire camera and, media like shop in order to be a freelancer.
Yeah, I do. Do you want a red? I've got a red just in the cupboard. I've never shown you it though. Only for...
Hashtag Tim owns a red. Let's make it happen.
Well, I guess a majority of freelancers at least have a laptop. And I think that's bare minimum. You need to at least have a laptop. If you're a camera operator, if you're a film person, anything to do with cameras, you can rent them. A lot of people do rent and then just apply back to the job. If you're a designer, most designers, illustrators, that kind of realm, all have laptops. You need at least a MacBook that can support all the applications you use, even if the client is giving you like a high res file. You need to be able to. So I know when I started, I used a 13-inch MacBook Pro and it wasn't that great. And yes, some people can make do, but if I want to churn a bit of design work super fast, and Photoshop is just not handling it, because I'm opening these massive files, I'm trying to make cool things happen with it, then at that point, you just need a better laptop. because not every client or every person you work with, even if you go to the office or if you're at home, not everyone will have a computer for you.
Yeah.
So some freelancers do have full array, full cine lenses, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Full setup at home, desktop, everything, and super flush. Some don't, but then that's also the caveat. If you go in a full-time job, they'll supply all that for you.
Yeah, like I've never owned my own MacBook.
Yeah, and since if you want like to buy the laptop you have right now, it's going to cost you $4,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And like if you decided to go freelance tomorrow without any other jobs going and you had to pay $4,000 for a laptop.
Yeah, and that laptop's specced out like with all the Adobe applications, the Creative Cloud. Yeah,
another £400.
Yeah, yeah.
So that kind of, but if you're full-time, your work should give you it and you shouldn't have to bear any of the cost, which then means you could use that same thing for your own side projects, not bearing any of the cost.
Yeah. Positives and negatives.
Yeah. What else? There must be more. I think there's so much people think a freelance is that it isn't.
Well, let's talk about the whole timings thing then, you know, like having time off, holidays.
No holiday, no time off.
When's the last holiday you had? Well, not including COVID, all right? Pre-COVID.
I know. I went to Hong Kong, but that wasn't really a holiday.
I guess at the start of the year when we went to Vienna and Riga and Helsinki. Was that the last holiday?
Yeah, but would you call that a holiday? I was filming all the whole time.
No.
It was kind of a holiday, but not really a holiday. Yeah,
but if you think about that, like when was the last holiday when you didn't shoot, when you went to Spain? Tim's going to be like, the last holiday I went on was 2013-14.
I've never been on a holiday then.
Holiday where you just lie down on a beach or by a pool.
Yeah, never. Like, I
guess what holiday is for you though, right? It's subjective.
I went on a retreat last year with my friend Maiken. We did shoot, but not intensely. That was almost a holiday because I did get a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
I wanted to go on a holiday this year. Don't think it's going to be likely.
Is that because it's hard for you to switch off and switch off of like work mode fully?
Not really. It's just, it's so constant. It's not like if I switch, like I still have stuff to do. It's Saturday today and it's Sunday tomorrow. I still have loads of stuff to do.
Yeah.
And it's not, I might not, some of the stuff, well, actually right now I do have stuff actually for clients to do, but sometimes some of the stuff is you just need to keep it ticking. It's not like I can switch off my laptop and not reply to any emails, because emails will come around and I always need to look out for the next thing. It's not like the next thing is always lined up for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I did ask one of my jobs to take a holiday for 2 weeks. That resulted in me not be able to go back to that job because they needed someone. It took me about a week to kind of come back, recollect myself, then recontact people. It isn't more about just switching off. Like I can't switch off.
Freelance is like always on.
Yeah, it's kind of always on, because if you think about it this way, there are so many people right now that are inverted commas freelancing. If I switch off, there's so many thousands of other people that will be switching on. So then let's say I can technically work from anywhere, but let's say one client is saying, oh, here, we have this video. Can you help us edit it? Or we've got a bit of design work. Can you just help us do it? It only take a couple of hours. And I don't reply to that email, or I'm switching off and I say, look, I'm on holiday. Give it to someone else. They find another freelancer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's me out of the books.
Okay, I was watching a video on how someone worked as a freelancer. I don't know if you want to add to this conversation, but are you someone who's checking their emails throughout the entire day, or do you have set times? Let's say that you're in the middle of an edit. Are you solely focused on that edit, or are you kind of on your phone, or like, do you have set times throughout the day to work?
Yeah. So I used to have set times where I would check my emails in the morning and then do work, and then check my emails, I don't know, lunchtime, and then check my emails in like after work. And then kind of whatever time it was, I would just focus on what I was working on. then I have a couple of email addresses, and then I only consolidated majority of business emails just on my phone. The rest of the random emails would have just been like, I check them once a day.
Yeah.
And then I decided just to push all my emails onto my phone whenever they come, because sometimes it's like, well, if I'm doing something, I can still multitask. And if someone needs something quicker, then I have to reshift my workflow. It's more recently, but if I was editing or doing a bit of design work, that design work doesn't have a deadline until 3 weeks or 3 days time. I'm just starting to work on it and kind of do it. And if a deadline has it tomorrow, then if they ping me and be like, actually, we need it today. And if I don't look at that email until the end of the day,
then you've lost that job.
I've either lost the job or I've pissed off the client.
Mm.
But then if I am able to read the email, be able to quickly ping on my phone and say, sorry, I'm actually currently out at the minute, but I've just read it, but I can get you it by tonight at 8 o'clock. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Then I've at least they can reassess, be like, okay, Tim can't do it, so might get someone else, or not super important, so we'll just wait.
Yeah.
I would love it if I could only check my emails once or twice a day and not bother with it. And I have got to a stage where I would check my emails, drop everything to inbox zero, have no emails in there, and then start from there. But just doesn't happen. Just keep getting emails and emails about things.
Mm. And contacts are useful as well at the end of the day, especially for a freelancer, to have that bank of emails and clients that they've worked with that you could always go back to and reach out to.
Like, I might read the email, but I wouldn't necessarily, sometimes I might not reply, and I would just read it so I have acknowledged it and know, okay, I need to maybe think about this. And then we just send my inbox before I get to do this.
Oh, I love a flag. I'm a flagger on emails.
Oh, really? You don't get flags on Gmail, do you?
The thing is, we have Outlook.
Okay, that's why.
Yeah. I'm not a big Outlook fan. I'm way more of a Gmail fan, but unfortunately I'm in a full-time job where I have to use Outlook. Here's a question. I've worked with many freelancers over the years, and every now and then I've had to ask someone for a CV or a showreel. And a lot of freelancers in the creative industry don't really adhere to CV rules. So what's your...
You think? A lot of people do have CVs.
They do, but I've also worked with a lot of people who don't, because they're like, we've got a portfolio. Like, can I send over my portfolio instead? Or like a showreel? Like, where would you say you are right now in terms of, if someone asks you for work, one, do you think a CV is important? Or do you think like something like LinkedIn is more important? Or having a showreel, having a website, having a specific online portfolio, Instagram? Like, what, if you're a young creative right now, looking to go into this world, maybe you're at university or you're coming out of university or you're in your first job and you're like, oh, like, what can I start doing on the side to better improve my chances of getting a job? Is a CV worth it in 2020?
100%. Everything's worth it. If you listen to the episode about my timeline, everything I actioned at uni is benefiting me right now. Everything I actioned, like, I have all the files saved about what I did during uni, during my final year, in terms of how I prepared myself to then go out to the world to get a job. Essentially, if you are a creative, if you're a designer, if you're not a designer, you have a creative eye for things, get a CV done.
I think it's because full-time employment, right? If I'm going to go for a new job tomorrow, they're going to want a CV straight away. So my entire career has been built on, oh, that looks good for your CV. Oh, that like company that you work for is good for your CV.
If you're a designer, you need a CV. You need a CV that's nicely designed. If you're a photographer, okay, maybe photographers and filmmakers is a bit different, but I wouldn't say there's any harm in having a CV.
Yeah.
Either printed or just divert someone to your LinkedIn, but have something at least online. Like, online presence, offline presence is super important. If you're in uni, CV, online presence, LinkedIn, website, social media, super important, because even full-time people, as soon as you apply for any job, I'm straight on Googling your name, looking at your social media profiles, seeing if you're a party animal, party animal is actually fine, But seeing what you post on social media, seeing what you talk about on Twitter, seeing about what you say on Facebook, it's super important. If you are like applying for a really modest job and you're like swearing and you've got provocative images online, maybe the recruiter would be like, not going to hire this person, or they're a bit weird.
Mm.
But then that might suit some other people. So I would say anything that you can think of that could potentially get you to stand out, then you need to get on it. Get a portfolio done, get a website made for your portfolio, get on all the social media platforms that you feel that are suitable. If not suitable, just get on them anyway. There's no harm. The more you can do, the better chance of you getting a job, especially if you're starting out. But personally for me, yeah, got no CV, got no showreel, got nothing.
Yeah. I think I'd be way less inclined to hire someone if I couldn't find them online.
Yeah, you know, if I type word of mouth kind of helps.
Yeah, because especially at the BBC, I was typing out people's, you know, names, just be like, such and such freelancer, such and such freelancer, just to see like what comes up. And if you have a website, then I'm like, cool, this guy's legit, or this girl's legit.
Yeah.
Like, and then you can see the work that they've been doing. If they've got an Instagram, even better, because it's more of like what I relate to. And I can be like, oh, yeah, they're regularly posting.
Same with anyone. If you are a freelancer, especially, you need 100% a website, a proper email address. Don't do this hotmail.com and Gmail shit. It just doesn't work. You need a proper website. Get on Squarespace. Super easy. It does everything for you. Wish this was an ad, but it's not. And you can set up your email straight through there. And it just gives you so much more professionalism that you have. Okay, you have your own website, your CV, it's actually on your website. Oh, not on your website. Oh, it's LinkedIn. Oh, I can see your Instagram. Oh, I can see your Twitter. It's just one link, one click.
Yeah.
I can kind of see and get a broad image of what you do, who you are, if you might even fit in for the team, because if there's 400 people applying, I wanted people to shuffle through. Like, recruiters do this really well. They'll shuffle through everyone's profile, look at their CV, look at their online. Might take 15 seconds. If you're not interesting, then you're off the list.
How important is it for you on your personal accounts to represent you, to represent what you do? Because let's say you're a freelancer and you're, I mean, if you're a photographer, obviously if you're posting random terrible pictures on Instagram, it's probably not going to look too great. But if you're looking to get into the digital industry, and let's say a lot of the work that you do is under a confidentiality kind of agreement and you can't really post it on your personal pages, how would you go about that if you can't post what you do anywhere? And yeah, how important is it for you to keep a professional, you know, personal account, either on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, wherever people want to find you, on YouTube? Do you think having those social personas on those platforms is important?
If you have work that is signed under NDA, I think the only way around that is just to tell your potential client that it's been signed under NDA, but you might be able to show them in person at an interview or through like a online interview that you can show them on screen, but you can't actually send them anything physically or through PDF. The other way around that is get a website with password protected, so it's just to that client and just extend to them that email that this is password protected for a certain reason. And if they don't oblige to it and they use it, there's different wording to use, but essentially this is just for your viewing. You cannot download this. You cannot screenshot this.
Yeah.
This is under whatever.
Yeah.
But I would only do that if the work has already been released to the world, not if it's like top secret.
Yeah.
In terms of the social persona and what you have on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or whatever social media, I would just kind of keep it to like any creative, just like make it nice looking. Like, I wouldn't post any of that stuff that you're not allowed to post, because it just doesn't make sense to get in trouble. Especially if your client that you did the work for is like, why did you post this? You're not allowed to.
Okay, final tricky question. Well, not really a tricky question. The finance side, dare I say it, tax. Is it as bad as what?
Yeah, it's bad. It's so bad.
I hear that every April.
It's getting better, but it's just, I'm still learning a lot. That's not the main thing I want to focus on.
Yeah.
I've never heard of one freelancer be like, yes, I'm super on top of everything.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be on top, but do you understand everything? Oh, just got an accountant to do it for me.
Yeah.
But they never really talk. Like, no one ever really talks about the nitty gritty of, oh, I have to upload my bank statements. I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to do, oh, I have
take
to do my expenses.
Take pictures of receipts.
I have to keep all my street receipts. You have to keep them for 6 years.
Do you?
Legally, because after, let's say, 4 years, like when I started freelancing, someone could turn to me now and say, okay, we want to check your accounts. We need that receipt.
Do you physically have copies of them, or do you just take digital copies?
You need at least digital copies for any major things, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting. Finances is a difficult one for a lot of freelancers. A lot of freelancers don't know how to, like, it's just not our jobs. Our jobs are to...
to be creative, to do the work, to come up with ideas, to put the edits out. And then all of a sudden, you've got to worry about...
how to pay the government, how to pay taxes, how to save money.
Yeah.
How to make sure you have money for a rainy day if that ever comes around. Like, just so much stuff that you just don't get taught at school.
Would you say where you are now, you're in a better position than when you first went freelance after Jack Wills?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So it is, again, a stage of each year, you just get a bit better at it.
I'm still learning. I think everyone's still learning every year, year in, year out.
Yeah.
You are learning as you go. I have it, quite a lot of it figured out, but I'm definitely still learning.
Nice. Thank you, Tim, for this insightful conversation. Sorry it's been a lot of me just hounding you with what you do and what is a freelancer and how it's beneficial, but I do think it's very important for people to know what goes into what you do and how you live your life and how you make a career of yourself.
That is not even a drop in the water, a drop in the pond.
I was going to say something else, skimming the surface.
Skimming, yeah, whatever. But that's, like, there's so much more to it, because I feel that even if you know me and you're listening to this and you know that I freelance, I definitely work a lot more than I ever have worked. In terms of this morning, I've been working from, well, I got up at 7. I've been pretty much working from like 8, half 8 until 3, let's say. And then took a break at 3.
Yeah.
And then I've kind of been on and off working from 3, well, let's say 4 or 5 until like 7, then took a break. And now this is technically
work. It's gone midnight. Yeah.
Yeah, so then it's just like I've been working up since 7. I've been up for, how many hours is that? 15 hours? And then it's all going to happen. Well, I'm not going to get up at 7 tomorrow, but pretty much just all going to happen again tomorrow. I personally don't have the luxury of just shutting off on Friday. Like today, for example, you've had a lot of, I'm not saying you have a lot of time, but you've had pretty much the whole day, a lot of time to do whatever you want to do and what you want to focus on.
Yeah.
Every freelancer will be very different. I know some people might come back to this and be like, no, I clock off at 5 and I'm earning loads of money. Realistically, for me, it's more, I don't mind putting in the time right now because I don't want to be in my late 30s and having to do exactly what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Your situation might be completely different in your late 30s. Like you might have a family, you might have, you know, some people.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like if I end up having a family or my situation changes,
yeah,
I don't want to have to be slogging the amount of hours I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
I don't mind not sitting in the sun for, like, I could easily have sat in the sun all last week. And I think even the week before, I could have just sat in the sun outside.
Yeah, for those who are listening outside of the UK, it's been extremely hot weather in the UK right now.
Yeah, the past 2 or 3 weeks. So yeah. I could have easily been like, oh, just going to log off and sit outside in the sun while you sweat it out in here and I'll go out and sit and get a tan. This has been on my mind since last year as well, but I know I don't need to be sitting in the sun right now to get a tan. It's not priority, whereas I need to get the work in. I need to put the hours in. I can sit in the sun when I'm in my 30s or in 2 or 3 years time where I'm really more comfortable in like financially terms. And
yeah,
that's pretty much it.
So put the effort and the work in. I'm sure there's like a professional Gary V quote for this, but yeah, like put the effort and work in now when you can, when you're young, when you've got the stamina and the strength to do it. And
yeah, well, basically what Gary V would say is like, eat the shit now and reap the rewards later, because I can't, like a lot of younger people can eat, like technically eat shit in terms of you can have a cheap meal every day and save money and then later down the line invest in something else and then you'll be more, like your body can handle it right now, but it won't be able to handle it when you're older.
Yeah. To be honest, I've seen that even from when I first started at a job, because when you first start at a job, you work super long hours and you're willing to make that commitment to get to the next level. And then, you know, you work at this company and let's say you might do the odd late night, but not as many as what you were originally doing. And then you move to the next level and you go in at, you know, 9 or 10 maybe. And then you get to leave at like 6, but you don't have to work late into the evening. And I think as you get older, because of your skill level, what you say throughout the day is more vital to that company. And so, you know, you're not expected to then be working fully late. I mean, I'm saying this, I have been working late, but that's only because I've been working with a lot of people in the US. So like time difference is different, but you're not necessarily expected to work super late in the evenings, especially in a full-time job, as you get more progressed into your career, because you're just not, and like, you're not expected to do that.
I've had jobs where I've woken up maybe at 6 o'clock in the morning. I've got ready, got everything packed, had to be somewhere for 8 o'clock. I didn't finish. So did one job that might've went till like lunchtime, let's say, had lunch, like a brief lunch, went to another job in the afternoon, and then grabbed dinner, and then went to another job in the evening, came home, and then worked on an edit or edit some photos or something. I can't remember exactly what, but edited something and then went to bed at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock so I could deliver some of the stuff from the morning. On them days, like it's all day.
That shoot, by the way, on one of those shoots, I'm pretty sure I saw it on Netflix the other day.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
Oh, wow.
I think so.
I need to have a look at that.
If it's the same day as what I think you're talking about, but yeah.
Oh, wow. But yeah, like it's just crazy long. But then that's what I mean, where in terms of I'm not going to be able to do that when I'm in my late 30s.
Yeah. And I don't think people want to.
It's going to be so much harder where I can. That's not that great for my body right now, but I can kind of keep up with the super long day.
I'm just laughing to myself thinking, imagine if you're 50 and 60 and you're like
still doing it.
Still doing the hours that you would do as a 20-year-old. Like, F that.
No.
When I've reached that age, I want to be like kicking back in my flat in Hawaii and looking at the sunset.
A flat in Hawaii? A flat? I want a mansion at the time. Not a flat. A flat in Hawaii, not even a house. A flat.
It's gonna be a fancy flat, Tim.
Not even a bungalow, a flat.
Okay. Right. This has been very insightful. To anyone who's still listening, thank you so much for sticking with us. I hope you've learned something, or you've agreed or maybe disagreed with what we've been saying. Like, we wanna hear from you. So get on to Tomlin Podcast on the Instagram, on the socials. Head over to our website. If you want to drop us an email, please do. timelinepodcast.co.uk.
That's it.
Yes. Get involved. Thank you so much for listening. Tim, I'll let you close this one out. It's been good. It's been great. See you on the next one from me.
Bye.
No, you're meant to be like, oh, you're meant to give a spiel.
I hope you guys have had an awesome day, no matter what you're up to. Let us know in the comments. Well, in the Instagram comments, what you thought of this episode. And yeah, as Charlie said, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on freelancing. We will put an Instagram post about this. Once you've listened to this and you've seen the post, go comment on it. We want to have a conversation with you as much as we can and maybe go into more detail about some of the freelancing aspects if you would like that. But yeah, I will catch you guys soon. Okay, bye.
All right, bye.